In a world where women are barraged with information when it comes to how best to manage menopause, it can be overwhelming and confusing. Between having their symptoms dismissed by their regular physician and then being overwhelmed with information on social media, it's hard to know what's fact and what's hype. Today, my guest is Tamsin Fadel, a menopause advocate who's made it her mission to help perimenopausal and menopausal women navigate through the information and disinformation so that they can get the correct information when it comes to maximizing their health. I'm Dr. Lauren Stryker, a gynecologist, best-selling author, and a nationally recognized menopause expert. When it comes to menopause, midlife, and what comes after, I'm betting you've not gotten a lot of information from your own doctor. If women are given good information, they'll make good choices. And I'm here to give you the inside information. Let's face it. We expect politicians to twist facts, ignore facts, or make up their own facts. And no one blinks when one politician says there's no such thing as climate change, and another says the world is burning up. Unlike politicians, doctors have always been in a different category. But between social media, a new book on menopause coming out every week, what's in the news, and what your own doctor tells you, it's gotten really complicated. Historically, if a doctor told a patient they had, say, endometriosis, it wasn't questioned. And when that patient was given a recommendation, they didn't leave the office and do research. They left the office and filled the prescription. But all that changed when the internet allowed patients to do their own research and have access to endless information. And then enter the era of social media, when virtually anyone could have a platform and present their opinion as truth. This wasn't much of an issue when the Kardashians influenced which product would make your hair shiny. But then the Kardashians started telling you how to keep your vagina healthy. It didn't take long for medical doctors to enter the influencer sphere and start disseminating medical information. Now, many medical influencers who appear credible and knowledgeable recommend very different things than the doctor who delivered your kids and done your pap tests for years. So how do you know who's right? Who do you trust? Lots to unpack here, and I'm so glad to welcome Tamsin Fadel, who is now devoting her career to helping women get the right information when it comes to menopause. Welcome, Tamsin.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm so excited about this. You know, I look at you as someone who's, you're an advocate for women who are struggling with menopause. They're frustrated that their doctors aren't helpful, women who feel muted, dismissed by those doctors. So today I want to pick your brain to try and get some insight into what women are really thinking and how they should best navigate this ever-growing and ever more confusing menopause space. But before we get to that, I want you to talk a little bit about your own journey to take on this role of menopause coach, patient advocate.
Yeah, well, it wasn't one I ever set out to do. I was a journalist for 30 years, spent a long time in television news, delivering the local news every night. And one night while I was trying to do that, I had massive heart palpitations where I felt like I couldn't get control of my breath. I had this immense heat come from underneath me, and I knew that something was happening, but I didn't exactly know what was going on at that point. And I'd been having hot, cold, not feeling great, sleeping kind of crappy, weight gain. I never attributed to anything because I had endometrium polyps, so I was bleeding.
Yes.
Still, not sporadically, but bleeding. So I thought I saw my period. But somebody led me off the set. I didn't finish the newscast that night, and I laid down on the floor in the bathroom, and I was like, I don't know what is going on. Like, I don't
it
know.
It was really. Yeah, this wasn't subtle. This wasn't like, oh, I'm warm. This was something is wrong. Something is very.
I gotta say, yeah, I'm not somebody that's like, oh, I have a little thing. I can't take it. I'm like, I think I'd like to consider myself a little, you know, like I can deal with whatever's coming my way. But that night, no, I left the studio, and on that following Monday, I made an appointment with my GP, and then I made an appointment with my OB, and then I made
Can I interrupt you for one second? Can you tell me, how old were you when all this was happening?
That's irony of it all. I was 49, and so when I got
and did menopause before you did menopause even enter your brain as could this be or maybe this is it?
It wasn't even a word I used.
Failure. You're thinking, you know, brain tumor, right?
Well, first I was like food poisoning. And then I thought like, you know, heart problems. And I thought I had brain problems because I was having problems with the teleprompter for like a year on and off. I'd look at a word And I'm like, I don't know what the hell that word. I can't remember it anymore. I don't know. I know it. I can't say it. And so, but none of those, I didn't glue anything together. You know, I was kind of playing whack-a-mole with my symptoms. So I was over here and got antidepressants. I was over here and got, you know, all these different things. Menopause was not even, I have no idea. It just didn't occur to me. It wasn't a word we used, and it wasn't a word I even talked about on television when we did health reports, or we just didn't talk about that.
Well, there's a reason for that. I mean, yeah. just because I've been really
as I've now learned.
Well, no, but I've been for what, you know, decades. And every time I would pitch stuff to a producer and say, you know, we really need to talk about menopause. You know, when they say menopause is having a moment, and I'm like, no, it's not having a moment. I've been talking, trying to talk about it for 20 years. And the response I always got was, no, we're not going to talk about menopause on the Today Show or on this show or that show because our sponsors don't want that. It's old. They want young. So, I mean, there was a very specific reason why that stuff was never talked about.
Well, you know, the television demographic for a long time, and you know, that's the world I lived in, it was 25 to 54, right? So I was on the verge of, when I left my job, on the verge of outliving my demo. Now, I think it's changed quite a bit because we know that the television audience has gotten older, but I believe those answers that you got. I know when I went through my divorce, I was asked not to talk about it because it just kind of looked like,
So you go to see your doctor. What happens then?
Go to see my doctor. Eventually get a note in my patient portal for my OBGYN that said, in menopause, any questions? Any questions? And I went, I was standing, I'll never forget it. It was like, where were you that day? I was in the airport and I was with my then boyfriend, Ira, now husband. And I was like, what the? I'm in menopause? What does this mean? And then I like got all choked up because I was like, I can't have children anymore. Now, I'd already made that decision.
It doesn't matter.
But for some reason, it was like
the choice.
An end.
Now that makes you no longer have the choice. So it changes it.
Yeah, it was so weird. It was so weird. And that's where it started. And I started going like, what does this mean? I need to figure out a natural solution because my mom died of breast cancer. How am I going to deal with this? And because I had no information at the time. I had no idea. And I thought what everybody else thinks, you know, estrogen hormone therapy is not a solution for me. And that's when I started going down this road and I haven't stopped.
So how long did it take you to get some real information to really find out what was going on?
You know, I feel lucky in that being a reporter by trade and asking questions, you know, that's where I started. So I literally started emailing people like, I'd love to have you on my podcast. At that time, I didn't even have a podcast. I just wanted to go back and forth and ask and do interviews to put them online. I went back and forth with hormone therapy for like a year and a half to 2 years. Like it was a while. I didn't believe I couldn't. I had to keep asking the same questions over and over and over again, you know, to understand who is telling me what. And I went to about five doctors before I really found one that I felt was getting it. You know, I went to the person that wanted to give me pellets. I went to the person that gave me antidepressants. I gave me the person that, you know, said you can handle it naturally with St. John's wort. I went to the black cohosh. I did them all.
This is so typical. Actually, it's not typical because you had the resources, you had the ability to research, to go to all these people. But even someone like you, who's a reporter, who knew what to do, still went round and round and round. So, okay, I think we're in agreement that it is important to tell women who are seeking menopause care that they need to see an actual menopause expert. Mm-hmm. And just because someone says they're an expert doesn't make them an expert. So what do you tell women specifically when they say to you, where do I start? How do I find an expert? What advice do you give them?
I mean, this is the advice I give them. And I every time I do, it makes me a little upset that we have to put the onus back on women to take care of themselves. And
that's actually always been the case. I mean, let's just talk birth control. Don't get me started.
Yeah, I know. But the more I do it, the more it enrages me, you know, that I have to say like, you have to trust your gut. The truth is that we should have the experts out there that have gone to school, that have learned these kind of things, that feel comfortable talking about this. It should be being taught in medical school. You know, so So that part frustrates me a little bit, but I do two things. I say like you have to be really aware of your symptoms and not dismiss. Don't put them in any other category, right? Like that's what I did, is put them in all these different categories. I'm depressed. I'm that, da, 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 da. And then it never came to perimenopause or menopause. And then the second thing I said is you've got to find a resource such as, and I list them out. I list like real resources out there. I give them the Menopause Society zip code finder. So that doesn't always have somebody in your zip code. I tell them what to look for in a menopause specialist. I give them a script of what not to accept when a doctor answers you that way, because I think that's important too. I wasn't raised where you question a doctor. I was like, you go to the doctor, you get your answer, and then you leave. It would be like questioning your
You
lawyer,
fill the
questioning
prescription, right?
everybody, right?
That's not the case anymore.
And then what I've tried to do is I've tried to like actually give people or find people different specialists depending on the area or people I know now. So I've
Yeah.
been putting together an actual directory to sort of help. Here's somebody in Los Angeles, here's somebody in Vegas, here's somebody in Chicago.
But that's not the problem when you're in
Crazy.
LA or
Right.
Chicago or New York, because you do have
No.
choices.
Telehealth has become, I think, a lifesaver for people. And so,
Absolutely.
that is something that I talk about and that I give. And, Midi Health is one of the places that, accepts insurance. That's a big deal. So I've listed out a couple of the telehealth places so that people have feel like they have something to go to for an answer. Because to chase around a menopause specialist in an area that might not have one.
You know that I work with Midi. I
Of
do
course. Of
educational
course I
stuff
do.
and other lectures. And I have completely changed my stance on telehealth because
I'm
I
sure.
used to say, no, you have to go see someone. This isn't good. And boy, was I wrong, because the reality is that most people don't have access. So I think that telehealth, as long as, and that, obviously Midi does take insurance, which is, and has really, really well-trained
That's a
clinicians.
big deal. That is a big
Yeah.
deal because a lot of people can't afford to,
Totally. We
compare
were
to
doing
access.
a panel together a couple months ago, the Let's Talk Menopause panel, and you were moderating my panel. And I don't know if you remember this, but
I remember you.
during the Q&A, there was this lovely woman who stood up and said, we'd been talking about, how most doctors aren't trained and how most doctors don't know much about menopause. And so she said, okay, well, I live in an area where there aren't a lot of choices. And I went to my doctor and he's completely clueless. How do I go about educating him? And do I give him papers? Do I give him your podcast? What do I do? And my response was, you don't. It's hopeless. Don't waste your time. Find someone else. And that got a big laugh. But I'm wondering if you would have given her the same answer, is that it's just doesn't make any sense to try and educate a doctor.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know, because I know how difficult it is and how frustrating it is to go to. I know as a patient who's gone to a lot of doctors now, that it's scary to go try to find get an appointment. Try to find somebody that takes your insurance if you have insurance. Try to go have a new trust factor with that doctor. I don't know that I would have given that same answer. I think I would have been like, try to bring something in, but I don't think it was a wrong answer. You're probably right
That
at
was
the
a
end
little
of
flip,
the day.
so.
Well, but I think at the end of the day, though, I understand all the things as a patient, because I'm not a doctor, that it sucks to have to go in there and say, hey, I printed this off of the internet, or it goes in. It sucks to go in and be like, hi, I'm brand new. I know my other doctor knew me 20 years. You don't know anything about me, but we're going to start over. So I think it's hard. It's like dating. It's really hard. And there's a trust and there's a lot of stuff that goes with it. So.
And one of the things that struck me that has always been the case is what I call the girlfriend factor. When people say, oh, I want, a gynecologist that I can relate to and I can talk to, like she's my girlfriend. But I've always found that really offensive. If someone had brain surgery, they don't look for the neurosurgeon that they want to go shoe shopping with. They go for the person who has the expertise and experience. So what is it? What is it about women's health and menopause specifically that women place so much importance on relatability rather than expertise, which is quite frankly how people pick their presidents, but we won't go there.
I think one, you're laying there in stirrups, right? I mean, that's like one. But I think two, there are a lot of issues and conversations that come up during this that might not necessarily be comfortable for everybody to talk about. And in fact, for most people to talk about. Most people don't want to tell, you know, the stranger sitting across from them that sex is hurting and they hate having sex now. Most people don't want to talk about the fact that their body smells differently now. Most people don't want to talk, you know, so there's such, I think, especially my generation, as you know, Gen X, it was raised like everything's perfect. What smell? That's not me. You know, so I think that there's just that. I feel like that conversation is going to change as, yeah, you know, the generations change.
Yeah, I mean, I get that people obviously would rather talk to their girlfriends than some stranger about a lot of this stuff. But the idea that the person that you're going to for expert information you know, the girlfriend factor.
We have to normalize the conversation. That's the whole reason we're here. The whole reason we're here is because we don't feel comfortable talking about those things. And that's, again, the onus comes back to the woman of like, well, try to feel more comfortable with it. I'm hopeful. The more we're on social media, the more that we hear doctors speak about it, like you, the more that we have conferences, the more that we have books out there, the more that we have all these things out there, that women will feel like it's okay to talk to somebody about it. And they don't need their, you know, girlfriend, doctor.
All right. So let's talk about social media, because when we talk about comfort level, one of the things about social media is you almost feel like that person's your friend. You know, you spend so much time on their feed and you see them talking to you, you know, really see them sometimes, you know, live talking to you and answering your questions. And people have a much bigger relationship with social media people very often than they generally do with their own doctor.
Yeah.
But a lot of people on social media call themselves experts. And you and I think would agree that not everybody is an expert. But people tend to think that the people that have the most followers are the best experts. So what would you tell a woman who says to you, do I believe the people who have the most followers? How do you know on social media who has expertise and who doesn't?
You know, I think, again, we go back to, you have to be, you have to be filtering that, right? We wouldn't go up to anybody on the street and be like, what do you think about my care? You know, and I think it's the same thing there. I think you really have to pay attention to, you know, who they are, what they're talking about, what they represent, you know, who you see them aligned with. I think there's some important things there to pay attention to. And it is why I try to create a platform there with experts or people that I believe are credible people, or that I have vetted, you know, as best I can. I'm not perfect either. You know, I don't know. And I'm certainly not an expert, but what I've done my whole life is created platforms for people, right? On television, on, you know, films, on, you know, on all these things, on TV shows. That's what I've done, is bring the experts forward. So I don't have any special, Anna Wintour is like, I don't have any special gifts. I don't have any special gifts,
but I do have a lot of gifts.
Well, but I do understand platforms. I do understand that, like, you have to find and bring the people, the right people to the surface. I think you've got to be careful who you listen to. You know, I think you've got to trust your gut in some of those cases, words that I always hate to have to say, but I do. And I do think that you have to see what people look. If somebody has a simple. If somebody has a one size fits all solution for you, that ain't it. You know, if somebody is constantly trying to sell you something, that ain't it. You know, if somebody is, you know,
selling something is important. We're not going to get into the whole celebrity who are selling, you know.
No, I'm just saying, like, but I'm saying anything in general,
right.
Anything. And I'm not saying that you can't, like, I sell things, but I think you have to, you know, be very clear of what's there and what, you know, what's going on. If they're saying, like, this is going to solve every problem you have, like, you've got to logically think, like, you know, you want it to be great, but if it's too good to be true, that is just not the case. It doesn't work with anything. I don't care if you have a toenail pain. It's just, everything doesn't fix everything.
Oh, right. And the other thing I always tell people is if they make claims that is, and they have a list of like 4,000 things that it's going to do for you.
Yes,
big red
course.
Flag. Big
of
red
course.
Flag.
Of course, I'm not talking about things like, you know, look, I take supplements. There are certain things that I put into my diet. There's different things that I do. I have integrative health has been a huge part of my life. So I'm not going to ever talk against that. But I do think you have to be smart, because social media is, you know, there's a lot of people out there.
And a lot of smart people and a lot of really good people mix in with the.
Oh my gosh. I got to tell you something. I have a whole new community of women, and you know this, as a result of social media, that I would never have met before.
Right.
Doctors that are brilliant, that now have voices. And so you see people on my feed, and I'd love you on my feed. But I really try to bring those voices to the forefront, because if not, if we don't have experts like yourself doing that and spreading the word, then, you know, we're never going to get there.
Okay, so here's the dilemma. And this is actually a true story. This is a friend who came to me and really didn't know what to do. So she learned via an expert on social media that testosterone would not only enhance libido, but might help with cognitive function and maintain muscle strength. And her personal physician, someone who ran a menopause clinic, full professor, published 40 papers in academic journals. And so she goes to her annual visit with this expert that she trusts and says, I want a prescription for testosterone because I'm particularly worried about muscle wasting. And she's told, no, the data doesn't support that. There's no credible scientific studies that show that testosterone is going to help build muscle, et cetera. So she walks out without the prescription that she was hoping for. She's confused. She doesn't know what to do. So she said to me, how can the doctor who has a million followers on Instagram and is often scientific papers and seems really credible, how can that person be wrong? But how can my esteemed professor be wrong? And who am I supposed to believe? Right. What am I supposed to do? What would you tell her?
Look, I mean, I think that then we go back to, you have to do your research, right? Yeah. And you have to do what's best for you. And that's where I think it's frustrating, because when I went to, go on hormone therapy, the endocrinologist, one of many, pulled out a calculator with jewels on it, like from 1980. Oh, remember those little ones that had little jewels? And she's like, let me see what your, I lost my mom to breast cancer. Let me see if it's a good idea for you, according to.
Oh, so you're doing Tyler Cusack to see what your risk was of developing breast cancer.
Yeah. And I was like, what is going on here? So, that's scary to put it in the air. We're just normal people. I didn't go to medical school. I don't know what but that's what I feel happens to women. And that's why they feel very, very frustrated. And that not knowing who to trust is really, really difficult, which is why you have to do your research in it.
All right. So to finish this story. So this woman talks to her doctor, does her research, then goes back and DMs the social media person and says that her physician says that the scientific literature doesn't really support taking testosterone for anything other than libido. Yeah. What's your response to that? So this person says, well, it's true that we don't have the long-term data, but to do that data would take like 15 years. It's expensive. Okay. That study's never going to happen. Okay. And we have the science to support it. And we can't wait for scientific studies. I mean, theoretically, it would be nice to have those studies, but you should not be personally denied testosterone, which we believe to work based on, ivory tower academic criteria, And so then she comes to me and says, what do you think?
What do I do? Right.
What do I do?
Look, I think that it is scary that we don't have it, first of all, but we know what it's going to take to be able to get it. And I think that right now we have enough experts and voices out there that are seeing, you see women every day, you see what changes and helps women every day. You see who comes into your office like a shell of a person and then comes back like their old selves. So I think that sometimes we have to put the faith in that part of it versus waiting for everything to be perfect before we pull the trigger on some of that. Yeah. And that's what I do. And it's a hard decision. It's a hard decision because you worry that you're making a bad decision for yourself. And you're like, am I taking a chance because I'm trusting? It's a constant battle, and it's hard.
It's very hard. And I struggle with it as well, because I kind of straddle both worlds. I'm a professor at Western. I'm very academic. I publish papers. I adore my friends, my colleagues who are the academicians who do care about women, who do want to do the best they can for women. But I also adore my friends on social media who very often think a little bit more out of the box. So if we
I
say
love that. I love that. Because guess what? If we don't have those people that think out of the box, then we never move forward. It doesn't mean that we're always right about every single thing, but we've got to be thinking out of the box right now, because for years, no one's thought about us at all. Yes. So thinking out of the box means like we're moving forward.
So here's the next question for you. Okay. If we say, all right, we're acknowledging that it's not a perfect world, that we don't have these studies, that we may never have these studies, and we can't wait for these expensive long-term studies that are probably, you know, not going to happen in our lifetime. So how do you keep people from selling all that crap that doesn't work? I mean, Prevagen is a good example. There are zero studies that show that Prevagen is going to help with cognitive function. Yet with their compelling marketing, it is flying off the shelf and millions of people are taking it, believing that it will help them. So where do we find the balance here? What do we do? What do you tell people?
I mean, look, I don't think you can ever stop anybody from selling something, right? You go on, you can go anywhere online and anybody can sell anything to anyone. I think it comes back to education. It has to come back to that, because we have to make our own educated decisions about this stuff. And, you know, I don't know that, because we don't have the research, we don't know long-term exactly what, you know, there could be something out there that is just going to be great. And I'd love to see that. I don't know that I'm going to ever see it in my lifetime, but I think you have to educate yourself and realize that there's not going to be this one solution to everything. There's not going to be this pill that magically makes us all, you know, amazing and feel 100% better and feel like we did when we're 25 years old. However, if we even want to feel like that again.
I don't know. The 20s in some ways were not so great.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. I'm not sure that I want to feel like that again. But I will say this. You have to be educated with this stuff. Like, you have to think for yourself in some ways. You have to not. And the problem is that you get so desperate.
On women. You know, is that fair to women?
It's terrible. No, it's the thing I stand to get the most. It frustrates me the most, because I'm one of those women. And I think that's why this became such a... look, Lauren, I've done like so many stories over the years. I spent time in Afghanistan during the war. I did all sorts of things. Yeah. There's never been something that's put its hooks in me and taken such a hold like this has, because of the frustration of what I hear in women and the pressure that we put on women and the confusion that we have about it. And I'm one of those women. And so I think that it is a lot of pressure on them. I'm hopeful that the more experts that we have stand up and say, like, listen, yeah, we might not have that study today, but here's what we know. Here's what I know because I stand in and stand there and do research. Research every day. Here's what I know because I see 25 women every day before noon. Here's what I know because I prescribe so much estrogen that somebody comes back to me and is feeling like a totally different person and they're working again as a human being. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, yeah, it's education. It goes back to that. It goes back to speaking louder and making some noise about all this. And that's the only way we're going to get to that other part of research. But, you know, you're right.
And part of the challenge is that social media is a very big megaphone, and the people who are in the academic worlds have zero megaphone. Yeah. And so sometimes people do get skewed information, which again makes it even more challenging. And I don't know what the answer to that is. I mean, my colleagues that I look to who publish most of the papers and who are amazing and who know the data like the back of their hand, most of them don't even have a social media account. So it's a real problem. And it's, what's funny is if you go to an academic conference, like when I go to the Menopause Society conference and I'm, you know, speaking there and I'm talking to my colleagues and I'll say, so what do you think about, you know, fill in the blank, what she said on social media, they look at me and they go, who's that? You know, and it's like, I mean, it's such a different
But that's
world.
What we're here for when you talk about advocacy. So, you know, when I get a hold of anything that I think looks like, wow, I pop it up online and make sure I try to share it. And so that's what we're all here for, right? Yeah. So you have papers like that and you need a voice, you need that spread out. That's what advocacy is here to do. And that's why I think that this ecosystem is so interesting to me, this metaverse of sorts of, we've got lawyers, we've got doctors, we've got researchers, we've got scientists, we've got advocates, you know, we've got just real women that want to help spread that word. And that's where community comes into all this at the end of the day. I'd be somebody that's like, you got to have your community, but I am.
No, you're absolutely correct. And I think that really was one of the points that I realized when Jim Simon, who is one of the most prolific researchers in the country, I mean, the guy has written probably 200 or 300 papers in menopause, and he's got no social media presence. And he wrote this really incredible paper a few months ago about personalizing. You know, you talk about anyone who does one size fits all. And he really did the deep dive into the different kinds of estrogen and what's best for this and what's best for that. So I had him on my podcast. And, you know, when I first started my podcast, I was trying to be very strategic and only having people on with big social media presences because I was trying to get listeners. And now I don't care anymore. I just have people on that I like. And so I had Jim on and I thought, oh, it's probably not going to do all that well. No one's ever heard of Jim Simon. Tamsin, it was like off the charts. People were so hungry to hear this guy who was clearly an expert go through the data and explain it. And I think that that kind of also answers the question for me when you say, how do we get these people out there? I think we have a responsibility to call on these people who ordinarily would not be out there and talk to, you know, the people who really want to know what their research is and what they have to say. All right. So circling back to medical, to social media, and this is something I'm really curious about what you think, because, you know, I've been around a long time. And when I was in So when I was in medical school and during residency, part of what we were taught was how important it was to, we're doctors, conduct yourself in a professional manner, dress professionally, act professionally, not just in the office, but in public, in your personal life. And when I started practicing when I was in my 20s, and I quite frankly looked like I was 12, I look back at these pictures, I can't believe anyone trusted me, but I bent over backwards to act professionally and make up for the fact that I did look like I was, you know, didn't know what I was doing. But now we have doctors and other clinicians who are in social media, you know, they're singing, they're dancing, they're dressing provocatively, they're being very sexual, they're doing, you know, without naming names, there's this one nurse practitioner who's in her 20s who's like dancing around and singing silly songs about being a menopause expert, which I kind of think is an embarrassment to the profession. But one of my colleagues said something along those lines on social media and got blasted by people who said, oh my God, she's terrific. She's really smart. Leave her alone. So, all right. Okay. That's great. But I'm thinking, if I'm a 46-year-old woman who's looking for a menopause expert, am I going to make an appointment with a 27-year-old doing fabulous choreography? Or am I going to, you know, I mean, what's her motivation? Is it more followers? Is it more clear? You tell me what's going on social media with all of these professionals who are not, in my view, acting professional. Do you think it matters?
You know, here's what I think. I think that at the end of the day, if they know how to treat somebody like anybody else does that is acting professional, then I think that we're moving the ball forward. I'm the last one to judge, right? I've been a journalist for 35 years and now I'm putting my estrogen patch on in the bathroom. So, you know, a lot of people would say, you know, a lot of people said to me when I came out, like, what are you doing? You're going to ruin your career. Well, you know what? I didn't ruin my career. I stepped away from it. But what I also did was I feel like help a lot of women be able to stand up in alongside me and talk about what's going on or feel comfortable with what's going on. So, yeah, you know, I know that sometimes things are not done the way that we used to do them. Certainly not me. Like I never wanted to have an opinion, you know, as a journalist. Like I came from a time where you don't have any opinion. I'm like, hey, here's my patch. You know, so it's very different. I think,
you know, sometimes, I mean, it depends whether you're on cable news or, you know, I do the news.
Well, of course, but I'm saying
so
at the time,
I do health news every weekend.
At the time, there was no cable news.
Right.
I mean, there was, but it wasn't like it is now.
And when I do the news, I am told very clearly that even though I have very strong opinions, both politically, and people say stick to health. Well, politics is health because our politicians are in our vaginas and in our uteruses. Yeah. And I am told very clearly, it is very important that you are neutral. And it's frustrating, but that's used to be how it was on every station. And that's
100%. And that's where I came from. And I came from local news. Local news is very much that you don't have opinions there. And so, you know, so for me to be able to spread my message, For years, I'd be like, here's what's going on. And people listen to it. And then when I actually talked about what was really going on and really happening and really speaking with somebody versus at somebody, that changed. That changed the narrative for me. That changed my comfort level with women. And I think it changed how people listen. Things have changed. You know, how we listen has changed. If you ever thought that you would be listening to social media and then go into your doctor's office and say, like, here's what I learned, you would have said 10 years, 20 years ago, like, are you talking about social media?
Did you ever see, there's a New Yorker cartoon, it was one of my favorites, that is the guy who's sitting in his doctor's office waiting for the doctor, and there's a big sign on the wall that says, please don't mention Dr. Oz.
No.
And we could change that now to
right.
Please don't
But
mention.
I'll never criticize anybody that's helping educate. And if the, however they decide to do it, and it might not be for how I do it, or it might not be how you do it, but I will never criticize anybody who is trying to figure out a way to reach more people with information, because we all learn differently. Like my way of learning would have been 10 years ago, like, just give me just the facts. That's I was just the facts. Now I want different things. I want to be a little bit entertained with it. I'm not saying that it's for everybody, but if five people hear something and they're like, hey, now I remember it, or I know it, then I'm happy with that. 'Cause I
But
can't tell
part
you.
of the problem is, Hampson, is when we talk about just the facts, and I'm opinionated, you're opinionated, I've always been opinionated, but there's a difference between saying this is my opinion versus these are the facts. And in clinical practice,
Yes,
when
of
women would
course.
say to me, when I would say to them, okay, you have hot flashes, and here are your five options for things that are going to help with your hot flashes. So I could do a whole song and dance and go through the five things and the pros and the cons and blah,
A
blah, blah.
real song and dance?
It's a real song and dance. I always wanted to be a ballerina, by the way. I was a dance
Oh.
major in college. I was going to go into journalism. I was an
Oh,
English and a
gosh.
dance major who was planning on
Oh,
going
gosh.
into journalism and then inexplicably went to medical school. Yes, I'm total bunhead. I can dance, not like they do on social media. But, so then they would always say to me, well, I don't want to know all that. I want to know what your opinion is.
Yeah,
And I was
sure.
always very clear to say, I have an opinion. And I have an opinion about what I think would be your best option. And I'm happy to share that opinion, but I still, but I'm very clear about, but that's my opinion.
Lines, the
And this is
lines.
what my opinion is based on, that I don't think you're a patch woman. I think you're, a gel woman or an oral, you know what I mean? I mean, I'll
I
give
don't think
my
everybody
opinion.
is as comfortable with you, even as being a physician, to say that. I've been to so many that are like, I'm going to leave it up to you. I'm going to, these are your options. And then you're sitting there like, well, how the hell do I know? I'm not a doctor.
And ultimately, I do leave it up to them, but I'll say, this is what I think is your best bet.
But that's
If you
great to
want to
have.
go
I think
another
that's
route, I support you in that, unless I think it's something that's really a mistake,
yeah,
kind of thing.
you get it.
So it's a tough
I
one.
listen, I give it up to doctors, because I think it's tough. I think it's really tough. And I think that the more information that we do go into a doctor's office with and question can probably be frustrating for people who have not learned or educated themselves further. I think it can be probably, I think I'm, oh gosh, here she is again, patient,
No. But I mean, the other thing also, in fairness to physicians everywhere, is even the ones that do have a lot of information and want to talk to their patients, they don't have the time. Insurance does not pay for people to have a conversation. They pay for procedures, they pay for surgeries, they pay to have your blood drawn. And sometimes a doctor will literally have 10 minutes. And I was lucky because I had a concierge type practice. I could spend an hour with people. A good menopause consult takes an hour. It really does. It
That's
takes an
amazing.
hour to really go through someone who has multiple symptoms, a complex medical history, to really go through all of their options. So the social media doctors have the advantage. They're not limited to this 10-minute consultation, if you will. You can go on for hours and scroll and get all of this information. So it's tough. But I will also tell you, as a social media doctor, and I don't know if you've, and I listen, I have like two followers. I'm not like social media like other people that you work with. But one of the frustrations I have is I'm out there giving information, and if somebody disagrees with what I'm saying, the thing that just floors me about social media is they don't say, I disagree with your information and this is why. They attack me. Well, you're a moron, or you're, this and that. I don't even, I just don't respond. But I don't know if you have any advice to people who like basically attack you as opposed to your information.
I mean, I get that a lot. I try to respond to those too, because most of the time, most of the time they come from places that we don't realize they're coming from. And then they'll either say like, oh, that's not how I meant it. Or I'm sorry. It might have just been to like get a reaction. You know what I mean? So most of the time I'm like, so what's your question? Or what do you mean? Or how can I? So I do that. I didn't used to. I used to be afraid of it. I'd be like, oh, I don't want to make anybody upset. And now I just dive in because I don't know
I think
why.
that comes with experience and age, and I honestly I don't worry so much about making people upset, but I also don't want to be na there's enough nastiness in the world, so I don't want
No, not to be nasty. I think to understand where people are coming from. I
just to
think
see
that that's important
exactly.
because I don't think they always mean it quite how we hear it. Do you know what I mean? Even when it can be, yeah.
Enough about that. Let's talk about you some more. You have a lot of projects going on. You have a lot of things happening. So tell me what is going on in the Tamsin world, what you're doing now, what you're doing later.
So I have a documentary coming out. Called The M Factor, and that is in October, right in advance of World Menopause Day. So that's exciting. And it's been 2, 3 years, 3.5 years now. I lose track in the making of putting it together. And it was really just kind of a learning as I go. You know, I've never done a documentary before. I partnered with some a great team on the West Coast. And so that's been really interesting. And now I'm like, oh, I want to do another one because I think that there's a lot of information that you just can't get into one film, but we got a lot of the highlights into this that we really felt were necessary for the first part of really shredding that silence, understanding the sex part, the brain part, the hormone part, how we got here, how the past is an indicator of where we are right now. And so that was really important for me in this film. I have a book coming out. We haven't released a title yet, but that'll be in March. And so has a lot of incredible doctors in it, including you, and quotes of different things that have happened over time. And understanding is kind of a more of a girlfriend's guide of understanding the
Girlfriend's
state.
guide.
I know, understanding, but they're not coming to me for
But I
for
want to hear
their
more about your book,
appointment.
because I knew you had a book coming out, but I don't really know what the content is. Is the
Yeah.
idea to give specific information about menopause, or is it more to navigate the space, or is it more about, what you did in the documentary as far as historically how we got here? Like
It's all three, really.
frame the book.
Yeah, that it's all of it. It's really how menopause impacts all aspects of life because I think that that's an area that I really didn't understand and it's what I've learned. And so it goes into relationships, how it impacts if you're dating, how it impacts workplace, how it impacts because that's really what I can speak to. I do the who, what, where, when, and the facts, and I have interviews with doctors. And so I wanted it to be all encompassing, like here's the information, and then you're going to go from the doctor's office to the rest of your life because that's what happens. It doesn't end in the doctor's office. And I think sometimes that's what we try to do is silo it and be like, okay, now you're going to get your hormones fixed and it's going to be all okay. And that's not because it hits a lot of different areas. It really knocked my confidence. It really threw me at work. It really affected, I got married at the age of 50, right in the middle of it all.
Me too, my second
So,
marriage. Yeah, exactly.
yeah, so it really impacted a lot of different things. And I really wanted to go into that because I feel like that's a big conversation for me.
It's funny because we have a mutual friend, Bella Gandhi, who has been a guest on my podcast, and
I love that.
I actually
She's
hang out.
done it.
But we did an event together. I don't know if I ever told you about this. We did a big live event in Chicago that I actually did when I launched one of my books, XRX, and we called it Dating After 50. And it was the premise that dating after menopause, essentially during perimenopause, menopause. So Bella talked about how do you navigate the world of dating. She's a dating coach, and how do you find that perfect guy? And then I talked about, and now you're going to take your clothes off, and how daunting this is for women whose bodies are not what they were when they were in their 20s, who are, have vaginas that are like the Sahara Desert, and never thought that they were going to have to deal with a brand new
Yeah,
partner
partner.
seeing them. And I will tell you that if we had had 1,000 seats in that room, we would have filled them in a heartbeat. I think we had room for 250, 300. We sold out within 24 hours of releasing it. It's one of those events, and I wanted to do it. And then we did a panel discussion with some other experts. It was really terrific. And I've always wanted to do that again, because when you talk about the impact of menopause, and certainly we talk about it in the workplace, and I do a lot of talks about that and address that a lot. But dating. I mean, we're looking at what, one third of women over the age of 50 are single, and menopause is part of this issue. You know,
it is.
My
it
next
is.
book is on orgasm, and that's a huge
Of
area
course, it's fun.
for me. Well, yeah.
Well, if you ever want to do another event in Chicago when the book comes out, I would love to come join you.
You know what? Let's do it. We'll get Bella in there.
Yeah, I'd love to do it like that. It would be fun.
We'll get 1,000 people in the room. It would be so much fun. That would be great.
You know, I love Bella because I had a matchmaking business years ago. So it's been always, that's always kind of my, you know, I don't know. I just always love it. I love talking about dating and relationships. And I think it's, you know, it's a big deal. It's a big deal.
All right.
Deal.
So this is a commitment. This is live. We're putting this out publicly.
I would love
when
it.
Your book comes out, we are going to plan a spring event in Chicago.
Perfect.
We are going to talk about menopause and dating, and it's going to be you and me and Bella, and we are going to live stream it so that people who aren't in the room can attend, and we're going to get going and plan that. I'm so excited.
Yeah, let's plan that. Seriously. I think that would be really great. I would love that.
Great fun.
I would love that.
You have been such a good sport because I have not asked you the easy ones necessarily. And I appreciate that. Time. I appreciate your jumping in here. And people don't know this, but this is very early in the morning for both of us. And we both brushed our hair. And
well, I don't know if I did. I've been looking at myself and the thing. I'm like, oh, how good I did that in the dark.
Is there anything I haven't asked you that you want to weigh in on?
You've been
talk
just
about
wonderful.
That you want to just, you know.
You've been wonderful. I think we covered everything. I mean, you know where to find me. And I look forward to March. I think that'll be a lot of fun.
Thank you so
I do.
Much. Love Tamsin. Love talking to her. So what do I think about being strictly evidence-based versus making recommendations in the absence of definitive data? Well, I struggle because I straddle both worlds, ivory tower academician and out there on social media. And I have nothing but respect for my academic colleagues who have done the research, who've done the work, and stick strictly to the data. I was that person. And I've always prided myself on being evidence-based, but also acknowledge that we don't always have the data. So I've softened. Case in point, we don't have good data that shows that oral sildenafil, Viagra, will help women who are on SSRI have an orgasm. But we have some data. And anecdotally, I've seen it a million times. I give a woman who can't have an orgasm on SSRI some oral Viagra, and she's able to have an orgasm. So it's hard for me not to give her that option, even though we don't have rock solid data. Another example of me breaking the evidence-based rule, there is no data that applying CBD to the clitoris will help diabetics who aren't able to have an orgasm. But the science behind CBD supports it, and I've seen it anecdotally. So I tell diabetics to give it a try. There will probably never be a study, or if there is, it will take decades to see the result of that study. So my approach is that I let the women know that data is non-existent or limited, but that I have enough information to think that a particular approach is potentially beneficial and potentially reasonable and not harmful, and then let her decide. But I still struggle. Millions of people buy Prevagen because they believe that this will help their brain, when in fact, there is no reason to believe that's the case. Women deserve, though, to know what a recommendation is based on. Give women good information, and they'll make good choices. I'm Dr. Lauren Stryker, and thank you for joining me. You will find lots more information in my Inside Information books available on Amazon.com. And follow Francie as she navigates her way through vaginal dryness, hot flashes, and pretty much every menopausal symptom you can think of.
Through the night, I follow Francie.